The western states are experiencing an historic drought, but a strong El Nino is building in the Pacific. Forecast models predict a strong event that raises several questions. Will the rain bring relief for devastating floods and mudslides? Will it come at all? And how can the government predict the effects of this year's storm so agencies and citizens can prepare? For an inside look at El Nino forecasting, we turn to Mike Halpert. He's the Deputy Director of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Climate Protection Prediction Center in College Park. We'll get that right. Mike, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, and you're very welcome.
All right. I have to admit, I always forget exactly what the El Nino is when it comes up every summer. Tell us what it is and how you measure it.
Sure. El Nino refers to a warming of the equatorial Pacific Ocean between roughly the international dateline and the South American coast, the west coast of South America. We measure it. The primary source of data is satellite information, but we also have a network of moored buoys, so fixed locations that are constantly transmitting back temperatures. There's also ships that might pass through and take observations. So there's a whole network that we use to monitor the equatorial Pacific Ocean.
But is it correct to say also that NOAA in recent years, I guess maybe the past decade or so, has been adding to the number of sensors and the amount of data and also improving the algorithms that it uses to look at all of this?
Well, certainly the way we combine all the data, that's continually being upgraded and we hope improved. The history of monitoring the Pacific Ocean goes back to the mid-80s when there was actually very little information that came out of there, and we ended up with the surprise El Nino of 1982-83. So there was a large international program that really concentrated on improving the observing network, and it made a big difference in preparing us and alerting us to the building 97-98 event.
And so now we have what looks like to be a building event this year. How come you're calling it Bruce Lee in your blog about it?
That was actually more a play on the way hurricanes are named and now winter storms are named. So some folks here at my center decided that we would now start naming El Nino. We thought Bruce Lee was fitting. Will this actually live up to a Bruce Lee type or maybe fall short and only reach Steven Seagal status? Well, I guess we'll find out.
And so when there is an El Nino building, a warming in this part of the ocean, what does it do? What effects does it have for the United States?
Well, for the U.S., there's a couple. First off, at this time of year, we typically see its impacts on the hurricane seasons, both in the Atlantic and the Pacific. El Nino does a pretty effective job at helping to suppress hurricane activity in the Atlantic, so we expect to see a quiet hurricane season. It doesn't mean we won't see one big storm like we saw back in 1992 that folks in Florida will never forget, Andrew, for sure. But we would not expect to see the numbers, 15, 20 types of storms. The flip side in the Pacific is we oftentimes see increased activity. We've already seen a number of storms there, and actually a couple of those storms have managed to throw some moisture up into Arizona and most recently into California. If we get into the winter, the impacts will change. And what we would typically see, and we'll see if we get it this year, is the southern part of the United States becomes wetter than average. The northern part becomes drier than average. But we also see a flip in temperature where the northern part becomes warmer than average and the southern part may be a little colder than average.
All right. So it's an important event then, the El Nino, in terms of understanding what the atmospheric conditions will be for the United States. That fair to say?
Oh, for sure. El Nino is like the A game, so to speak, when we're trying to issue seasonal forecasts. Having an El Nino in place, I won't say makes our job easy, but it certainly gives us something that we can hang our hat on.
And so what has changed or how has the ability to tie the El Nino effects of itself, that is, it's warmer, cooler, it's this big, it's that big, to be able to use the what math are you using or what new developments are you using to be able to tie it to the weather that might be thousands of miles away from it?
Well, you know, we run very complex, what are called general circulation models, computer models that integrate the current conditions and then issue projections as to what we would expect to see this coming winter. Not surprisingly, the models are forecasting this event to continue and potentially even strengthen. And consistent with that, they're giving us that typical, what we call a teleconnection pattern to North America, where we're seeing at least in model world, we're seeing a forecast of wetter than average conditions really in California across the whole southern tier, Texas, the Gulf Coast, and you know, up the eastern seaboard a bit. And again, we're also seeing that those projections for a milder winter across the northern part of the nation.
We're speaking with Mike Halpert, the Deputy Director of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Climate Prediction Center, and you're in College Park. What other agencies does NOAA team with, especially internationally, to do all of this measurement, or is this something the United States does on its own?
Well, with regards to actually observing it, there is an array of buoys across the Pacific. The United States has the responsibility for maintaining those in the eastern part of the basin. I believe it's Japan has assumed responsibility for those in the western part of the basin. So there's that teaming. Whenever we talk satellite data, you know, many countries have their own satellites, and all this type of information is freely shared amongst all of the countries and organizations of the world. You know, we do have some collaboration in terms of at least talking with folks in Australia. Australia is certainly a big player when it comes to monitoring and predicting El Nino, because it has a very significant impact on their climate as well. Another country that we sometimes work with are folks in Peru, and of course they sometimes have very significant flooding associated with El Nino, as they're located right in the center of action. There's international agencies, things like the World Meteorological Organization, that kind of assumes a collaborative role in gathering information, and they'll put out statements that the United States contributed to on a quarterly basis.
Now, ultimately, the National Weather Service and some of the resellers of that information, you know, power radio broadcasts and television broadcasts, but is there an internal sharing mechanism for what you know about what could cause, say, FEMA or other parts of the Homeland Security Department to be invoked should a event happen that requires resiliency? Is there some way for NOAA to get this out to the rest of the federal government?
You know, there is. When you mentioned FEMA, and actually the Weather Service works very closely with FEMA. There's even one of our positions is a liaison to FEMA. I believe I've seen an office in our building here in College Park that says FEMA on the door. So we do work with them. Typically, we work closest with them on the seasonal hurricane outlooks that we issue in May and then update again in August. And historically, and I'm sure I will do it again this year, when we issue our winter outlook, which typically takes place in October, I'll do a briefing specifically for folks at FEMA. So that's probably our closest partnership with regards to alerting, you know, the potential for extreme type of weather and climate events.
And when you look ahead to the future of NOAA and the work that it does in this area, what would benefit the ability to predict what's happening in El Nino and to predict the weather most? Would it be more satellite capacity? Would it be more buoys? Or would it be more supercomputers, or all of the above?
You know, it's always easiest to say all of the above. I suspect in terms of the current network of satellites right now, the Pacific is well observed. Of course, satellites do have a shelf life, and so we need to make sure that the next generation satellites are being developed and ready to launch. Buoys, we do have some issues at times with some of the buoys being vandalized, so it's a challenge. It's quite a big effort to send a ship, you know, thousands of miles to repair sensors on these buoys, but it is critical to the observing of what's going on across the Pacific. And given that El Nino can have such large impacts on the weather and climate over really large parts of the globe, it really is an investment worth taking.
All right. Mike Halpert is Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center in College Park. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're quite welcome.